2, 3, 4.
I think a good teacher is someone that comes to school not for the fact that they're getting paid and they come to school for the student.
It's a boy thing.
What I think makes a good teacher is a teacher that's willing to connect with their students, make an effort to get to know their students.
It's a boy thing.
Like when the teacher's approachable and you don't feel intimidated when you go up to talk to them.
It's a boy thing. Hello, Bags.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. It's the holidays and I'm at home.
And I'm at home too. Just loving slow days, no making lunch boxes, no hustling kids out the door or myself. Just loving it. So, so good.
It's hilarious what a hustle that life of a teacher is. Even me without children still feel like that. And sometimes I'll wake up and it'll be, you know, 6:30 a.m. and I'll think to myself, oh, I'd be at the gym right now watching the basketball team practice. And I watch those times tick by and I feel such joyfulness. I read a book.
Oh, did you? I've been really bad with my reading lately. Like I was obsessed with that Scythe series. And then I wanted the last one. It's on the table, Gleanings, which was the collection of short stories.
Ah.
Didn't have it in the library. And then they got it in. Kelly, our amazing librarian, got it for me. She actually bought a brand new copy. And then I've struggled to find the momentum with it because I had such a gap in reading the series.
The book I read was pretty light. It was really just escapism. But that's what I try and do in the holidays as much as I can.
I think that's great.
Yeah. Yeah,
no
exactly.
One's judging escapism. We're talking about, you know, avoiding the hustle and late starts and escapism.
Yeah,
perfect.
Exactly. And by the way, that Scythe series is great, isn't it?
The second book, and I know you never read beyond the first one, but the second book had so many plot twists in it that was like, what?
Oh, I love it.
What? It was so good. Sun's trying to come back out in Dunedin now. We've had such good weather. I'm being quite smug because you don't often say that in Dunedin, do you?
No, and I spent some time in Wānaka and the weather was diabolical, like that inversion layer. Some days the temperature didn't get above 0.5 of a degree in the daytime. It was just cold and grey and grim. Driving back to Christchurch, though, passed through the Mackenzie country and it was all in that hoar frost state and it was stunning, almost worth it all just to have that. It was so beautiful.
I know. I'm actually jealous that you got to go through that.
Last week, we completely deviated from our original plan and I ended up talking about myself. But on reflection on doing that, I feel like we are right to delve into our own histories and our own personal experiences because the underlying message that we're trying to communicate through this whole podcast series is the authenticity of us being ourselves, of the students being themselves, and all of us finding that very truthful place in a classroom and how that's the underpinning of everything else. And so I'm good with it. I'm curious about what people might think. And on that basis, I guess that's why I thought I'd ask you if you'd be willing to talk through a little bit of your own experience with the death of your daughter, Scarlett, at the age of 7, and how that presented itself to you and then how you had to manage yourself as a mother and as a teacher and as a woman and a wife and a human being in the world after that, and how that's perhaps influenced or affected you now on the other side of it. Is that something you'd be open to talking through a little bit?
Yeah, I am open to talking about it because it's been, well, there are a few things. Since losing Scarlett, we honour her every day. So when anyone asks me, how many children do you have? I always pause because I think, here we go, here it is again. I have 4 children. They always give a whoa. And then they ask the ages. And of course I have to start by saying our daughter would be turning 16 this year. The whole thing about being okay with sharing the story is that every day I honour her. She is part of our lives. We talk about her most days. Our boys know her. Obviously Noah, her brother, he watched her die. He knows her. But the other two, they've never met Scarlett, but they know that Scarlett is their sister. So for me, I am fine doing this in that regard because, of course, she is a person. She is a person of great importance to me. She's somebody that I'm incredibly proud of. She's somebody that I love very deeply. And for me, there's a great deal of, I guess, therapy in being able to talk about her freely. The other thing about it is that, as you've said, we have to be our authentic selves. And this is a part of who I am. It's not a part of my life I ever wanted to experience. I didn't ever think I would experience something as traumatic as losing my firstborn. But it's who I am. I guess it shaped me into who I am. Maybe I'm a bit hardened after it. Maybe I'm a bit more fierce over things. But yeah, like when I said to my husband last night that we were going to talk about Scarlett, he said, why? I thought you were talking about teaching English. And I said, well, there are a few things. Firstly, I'm going to read some of the things that I've written. So that whole process of actually asking students to write about things they know well. That's always what I tell students to do when they're writing. Write about something you know well. This is evidence to that. You talked last time about giving things the chance to breathe before you write. That's also part of your story and the advice that you will give to learners. When you share something about yourself, then you make it okay for your learners to feel safe with you. When I say that, I don't mean that in a way like you said the other week, oh gosh, we're expecting them to be our counsellors or whatever. Not at all. You know, I introduce myself to new classes. I say that I'm a mother of four, that my daughter would be this age, but she died suddenly when she was seven. And then I carry on. I don't get all sentimental and depressed over it with students. That's not their job to care for me. I never want students to care for me in that way. But again, it's part of that narrative to live your best life. You have to be authentically true to yourself. And we are always telling our students to have their voice, to be who they are, to celebrate their identities. We must do that too.
I also think that because we've got things that we can share from our own experience that are difficult to deal with, we help them to start to understand the troubling aspects of the world. And we show that those things are survivable and that adults can function well in the world after things that have been difficult have happened. And I think that will help a lot of young people through some difficult times, is just modelling being able to function fine, even subsequent to something that a lot of people don't even like to talk about because they find it so distressing to think about.
Yes. I think the thing is that we're saying that you can thrive. You can go through things and you can thrive afterwards. It doesn't mean that every day is happy, by the way.
No.
But you can thrive and you can have success and you can have happy people in your lives and all those things. And you can be a fantastic partner and mother and colleague and everything else that goes with that. And actually, I think it's about demonstrating resilience as well. And the thing about that is we can say, let's put everything into a certain category of is how monumental is this? Will you care about this next week? Will you care about it in 6 months' time? You know, let's put things in perspective.
I was also thinking, in addition to that, I always think that as a teacher, one of the things that I offer to the students is an adult to practice on. And in some senses, for especially the older students, a chance for them to practice with their adult selves. And so being able to be someone who's comfortable, in my case, in my sexuality, or in your case, as a person who lost a child, and making that part of ourselves available to the students allows them to learn how to be around people who have had those kind of profound experiences, and they can just try it out. We create the safety for that by looking after ourselves, by being emotionally safe. But we also give them the information so that they can explore how that might affect the way they relate to a person.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really good thing to offer young people in lots of different ways, lots of ways that they can experiment with. Like, they have failure around us, and so they can experiment with how to fail in a social setting and how to function and how to express those feelings that come up associated with that. But it's more than that. It's also about how to just be a human being in relation to other human beings and to be affected by what you know about others.
I come back to that opening statement about the people who ask me how many children I have, and then I say, you know, I've got this many, blah, 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 blah. The amount of people that don't say anything when I say I've lost a child, it's so awkward.
It's so shocking for them and they can't manage it, right?
They don't. So I think when you talk about the students having those moments where we can make them better.
Yeah.
That's a gift, really, in my mind.
That's right, because you're not going to be the last person they encounter who's bereaved. Mm. I'm not going to be the last gay person they encounter. Some of them will be bereaved themselves, just like some of them will be gay themselves. And a lot of this modelling is really important for them to understand how to be around all of those things.
Yes. I think back to the year when we lost Scarlett and that class that I had, I had some really amazing year 13 classes. All my classes were amazing, but one particular level 3 English class, they were just phenomenal. They were honestly just the best humans that I could have ever encountered in my life. And I want to say also that they worked so hard that year. I worked hard for them too, because they were a form of escapism for me from my life. I think that year I got the best level 3 external results I've ever had in my teaching career, just because they came with me, I led them, we worked together in this form of escapism for me. And I say this also because if some of them are listening, I want to just say thank you, because they were honestly just incredible. But also because you can go through something like this and it doesn't mean that you're a failure. I feel like so much of what the Western world particularly sets out is that if you have something like this happen, you're scarred forever in a way that you'll never be the same. My morals and upbringing and thoughts and all that stuff haven't changed. And also that suddenly you're something that should be feared. And I guess my appeal also is just be decent human beings. Just be decent human beings.
Yeah. And the interesting thing I think possibly both of us may have found through our different paths is that quite often the most decent human beings we tend to encounter when things are difficult are young people. Yeah. There seems to be quite a lot more unaffected emotional decency in young people than there is in a lot of the adults we may have had to be alongside through those difficult times. And I think that they'll become great adults too as a result of, like I say, experimenting with that side of themselves while they're developing and socializing.
I wanted to start off, if I could, with Shakespeare's sonnet number 18. And this was actually my opening piece at Scarlett's eulogy. Shakespeare's obviously in the media quite a lot at the moment, but I think that you can see that it has its place. So I'm going to start by reading that because you read last week, and so it's my turn to do some reading.
Yep.
And then we can talk through things. So sonnet 18, shall I compare thee to a summer's day? Shall I compare thee to a summer's day? Thou art more lovely and more temperate. Rough winds do shake the darling buds of May, and summer's lease hath all too short a date. Sometime too hot, the eye of heaven shines, and often is his gold complexion dimmed. And every fear from fear sometime declines, by chance or nature's changing course untrimmed. But thy eternal summer shall not fade, nor lose possession of that fear thou owest. Nor shall death brag thou wanderest in his shade, when in eternal lines to time thou growest. So long as men can breathe, or eyes can see, so long lives this, and this gives life to thee.
I love it when you read. I love it when you do anything that's based on a kind of performative presentation verbally, because you're so good at it. So before I access the emotion of that, I do want to speak technically and just say it's kind of cool that you're a teacher who can do that in front of students, like be good at some things. You're so good.
Oh, wow. I thank my mum and dad for that. More my mum, I guess. She paid for me to do my speech and drama training. I do have my ATCL through Trinity College. So many years. Mind you, when I did my theatre studies degree, they didn't like it.
Because it was too structured.
Yes.
Yeah.
They couldn't really work with that.
No, yeah, exactly. That competition is so funny. But you go.
I was just going to say for me that was a really beautiful piece to start off her eulogy with, because of course it's that whole thing that stories can outlive, people's stories can outlive them if they're preserved in verse. You know, that whole thing of that you can have that permanence. And I guess that, this year it marks 8 years since she's passed, but she has that permanence in our lives and will continue to, because I keep her alive through words and thoughts. And I guess that this sonnet from Shakespeare highlights this.
It does so well, especially I always think in relation to this sonnet about how Shakespeare himself couldn't possibly have imagined that his writing would become so universal and so enduring. Mm. And it was a hope more than an expectation expressed in this poem that those words would endure. That's part of what grief is, isn't it? Because you're always having to experience the loss and somewhere within that find something for the now and something for the future. And his attempt through that piece of verse kind of proves that it can be done. Like he has successfully encapsulated that sentiment and experience in verse, and it has transmitted through the centuries. And here it is being spoken at Scarlett's funeral, all of those things.
That's such a beautiful piece of writing.
Yeah.
I just love it. So,
yeah. So when we teach, I'm being a teacher here.
Yeah.
I'm hoping I'm not using being a teacher as a refuge from the emotion of this, but but I do feel like when we teach literature, we're offering young people access to a way of articulating experiences that are sometimes quite hard to express. Like we're providing them with a resource that they can then use for their own lives, and in the ways that our lives are so unexpected, we can't anticipate how they might need to be able to access these things. But our opening those doors for young people is a great way to provide the possibility of that.
Yeah, and that's why when we talk about some of the great literature as well, that's why it has stood the test of time in my mind as well, because of the fact that the themes and the humanity or the presentation of it, you know, they have stood the test of time and they allow us to tap into those things. So if we can't understand something, well, read a text, you might gain some insight into what that's like.
That idea that the hand of the author kind of reaches out towards you from the text.
Yes.
And I think about Shakespeare, I mean, he lost a son. So there's a parallel in your experience that somehow probably resonates.
I was just thinking about how Claudia said as well at your conference, you know, that English is not social studies with stories. And this is true, isn't it, as well? Like we're looking at the language, we're looking at the rhyme and the meter and all those sorts of things, but we're also looking at the stories. The stories, not in a way that it's social studies with stories, but the stories of people, the things that they've encountered, the lives they've led, the social, political, cultural elements of their worlds, and how we can get our learners to step into those moments and gain that awareness. And it's, yeah, English is pretty special in that way.
Well, there's something quite transcendent about art, isn't there? In fact, by some people's definition, art would be classified as the best of us as humans. It's a representation of what makes us human. And I think art is a means by which we can communicate profoundness, things that are often perhaps beyond the usual expressions that we have for our feelings and experiences and convey them as we can see across time or between individuals. Mm. We always reach towards verse when we have those heightened emotions, whether it's love or grief or hate. They often then get expressed in the form of verse because I feel like that's such a rich, complex, indefinite, like the actual feelings are.
But it's also safe, isn't it? Mm. Do you know what I mean? Like, or a safe outlet as well.
Yeah, it's like a container. Can take it outside of you for a second. Can I ask how you think the you now is different after Scarlett dying, especially as a teacher, I guess? You mentioned, for example, being fierce, which I can see how that could be true.
I think when I say fierce, I think that it's that whole thing of, and you've talked about it recently, coming more into myself, you know, and fierce is also knowing the power of my voice and the change that I can affect. And so it's that and being a role model for that. Fierce is probably also, I've always had high expectations, but the expectations have probably got a little bit higher. You know, like I know what human beings are capable of, so I guess it's that whole thing of looking at what I've been through, also watching my son, you know, watch his sister die, and then how he's come through things and how he is such a nice human, you know, like he's such a nice human being. I guess it's talking about not falling on excuses, you know, like it's like we've got to live our best life and we've got to fight hard and we've got to work hard and we have to practice all the things I believe in, but they've been really solidified in my expectations of my learners. I also think that I now will look to offer them the best things that I can offer them as well, whether that's knowing that I have to be more skilled up on certain things, I'll make sure that I'm skilled up on those things so that I can, again, give them the best sort of chance. Because I guess if any kid's lucky to be around, then they deserve to have a really rewarding and rich experience in every facet of their lives, but particularly in the classroom. So that's how I fight for the people in my life, and that's also the students that grace
your classrooms.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is a parallel, but I know that I sometimes will get to a point where I have a kind of a fuck you attitude. I think this is the right thing. I stand for this. I'm not going to compromise, no matter how unpopular or socially difficult it might end up being. And I think that might be in my case because I've been through situations where I haven't found that I've had social support for myself or a position I've taken. And there's a freedom in that. There's a freedom in not having to always index everything I do and say to how it might be taken by other people, and instead just standing for things that are values driven. And I feel like once you've experienced social dislocation, I guess I'll put it in a kind of safely technical way, then you start to realize that you can survive people's disapproval. And knowing that you can mean that you can again be a lot stronger in yourself and in the pursuit of the things that you believe.
I do agree with you in terms of that fuck you attitude. For me, it's always this thing, and I often say it to our eldest son, the worst has happened in our lives. What could come from this? Do you know what I mean? So if there's something that he's got to do that seems overwhelming or daunting, we've lost your sister. There's nothing worse that could come. And it's kind of an extension of what you're talking about. And I don't think being in that zero fucks given place is a bad place to be at times, because actually this is how you, again, live your life as you are authentically true to yourself. But also we have become so preoccupied in society with caring about what people think about us. It's none of our business what anyone else thinks about us. just like we often say to students, or I do, I don't know if you do, sorry, I do when they're about to do a speech, I said, no one's going to be paying attention to you. They're just thinking about themselves. They're thinking about what they're going to have for lunch. They're feeling scared about doing their own speech. Don't even worry about it, you know. That's a powerful message to be able to pass on to people as well.
When it comes to us now and how we function in a classroom, I feel like these things have led to us just having real security in our own judgment and clarity about the decisions we make and the actions we take. And the unapologetic approach that we take to that, I think, is really positive for young people. I think they really appreciate it from us. Mm. One of the things that I learned about through knowing you is the challenge when you've had a child who's died young and working in education of having to watch all the children, especially the ones in the age group of Scarlett, grow up, knowing each year they go to the next year level, and at some point those year levels become the ones you teach. Like right now you teach 16-year-olds.
You can't see my eyes, but they just got a bit glassy then thinking about that. It was particularly hard at Mount Aspiring because when her cohort came, some in year seven and some were some of her closest friends, and then I relief taught some of them when they were in year nine because I was on extended maternity leave at that point. That was quite hard, particularly around anniversaries of her death or her birthday. I'm particularly looking at times at my year 11 boys. Not so much. I mean, it's quite nice actually being in an environment where it's boys because, of course, it's so different. Mm. It's so separate now. But some of the boys in that room are Wanaka boys. And one of the boys, I think, was at playgroup or whatever with her for a while. And so there's that connection that he doesn't really realise, but I do. I think for me at the moment, though, as well, and I know you're talking about being a teacher, and I will link it back to that, it's also seeing that a lot of these kids are meeting those first real milestones. So this year was the year of a lot of them heading to year 11 dances. And I've seen, you know, through friends and stuff, parents, they're putting up pictures of their kids. And I do wonder what she would look like now. I know she'd be beautiful, and I'm biased because she is my daughter, but she was a striking young woman. And yeah, I feel cheated that I miss out on those milestones. I guess the thing is, talking about it in the classroom, there are times when it's hard, but I always hold with me, even in the moments where it's hard, that I have to compartmentalise, but I also believe that Scarlett would want me to act with grace. She was a very graceful young woman, very graceful little girl. And she wasn't a young woman. She didn't make it that far. I go between the world she should be in and the world she was in. And because of that, she would expect her mother to act with decency and decorum and, as I said, grace. So I always carry those things with me. And in the times when I believe people have behaved poorly, and some people have said to me, I can't believe you didn't say something back to them, I think, well, how's that honouring my girl if I don't act with decency or grace? I think I probably should add in here, like people are going, was she sick for a long time or whatever? No, she got a vomiting bug and she was dead 23 hours later. She had acute peritonitis, which people get if they go to third world countries. We hadn't been to a third world country, or if you have a ruptured bowel or appendicitis, she had none of those things. It was just a freak of nature. I guess also people, we really need to realise that we think that we've advanced so much as human beings. Our biology hasn't. These things happen to perfectly healthy children, as my girl was. And her autopsy report proved that. So I guess, yeah, integrity, really important. And moving through being a teacher with those kids, yeah, I mean, it's not easy, Chris. It's not easy, but I just want to be a really positive role model and have a positive impact. And I can't, if I'm angry, if I'm a mess, if I'm spiteful, and how would that serve her if I acted in that way?
I think it's interesting. One of the things that I know both of us do when we apply for jobs is we both come out. I always talk about my sexuality and you'll always talk about Scarlett at the application process. And in a lot of ways for me, that's me testing them, whether they're going to be an environment that can manage who I am. Mm. Is that part of the reason that you will share that information so early?
It is. And it's also because I actually can't be bothered with the social awkwardness anymore. It's really awkward for me having to navigate people's responses. So it's best if I'm open and upfront. But also, you know, I've always been really transparent. So have you. I want to actually, at this point, recognize my boss, the rector of Otago Boys, because he has been incredibly decent towards me about Scarlett. Incredibly decent. So thank you, Richard, if you are listening. But if you're not, you deserve that shout out because he's been a man of with admirable qualities around her and my grief. You obviously read for us last time the piece that you wrote, a reflective piece about your time at OBHS. I found that writing to Scarlett was really a great outlet for me when she passed. I actually did it via my Instagram account, which, by the way, is private, so people couldn't see it. And it's only the people that I trust in that world that could, you know, experience that. But the other thing about it is that parents continue to celebrate their living children, so I continue to celebrate my living and my dead children. And so this is where I wrote this. This is actually on one of her anniversaries, 6 years, so 2 years ago. I think that I've probably write possibly less now, and that's not because I've come to terms with things, because I haven't. And I did think it's important to say in here that grief is actually love that you can't show for somebody. So that's why it's always sitting there. But because I think I'm also a little bit aware of people's, oh, here she goes again. So maybe I've got that feeling for myself. But anyway, all right. So this was on the 18th of March, 2 years ago. So my beautiful babe, I question how it can be 6 years since she left us. It was a Friday, a day after you'd received a glowing report from your year three teacher at a Thursday afternoon parent interview. Remember the Danish I bought you afterwards to celebrate? A day where we thought you were recovering from a vomiting bug. A day before a long weekend where we were meant to be heading away to celebrate Daddy's birthday. Tragedy seems to bring an acute awareness to the most ordinary of situations. Like I haven't forgotten that the day started grey and remained that way until the sun started piercing holes through the clouds in the early evening. Nor have I forgotten the fact that I got some groceries that morning and bought you a Lindt chocolate bunny. You asked me to put that bunny in the fridge. You said you'd eat it later. It was the last thing you said to me that Friday, 6 years ago now. How I wish we could have saved you. Daddy and Jane, the firefighters and ambulance staff, tried so hard. Words do not capture how sorry I am that they couldn't and that we were unable to give you the alternative living future you deserve. On this Friday, the air has the same crispness that it did on the day that you died. This crispness, along with the smell and hues of early autumn, remind me of your death. It may be 6 years on, but these intricate details and the many darker ones of your final day still haunt me. Today, I'll live in my world of contrasts, the present and 6 years ago. And in every moment, as I do every day, I'll hold you close. I love you today as much as I did 6 years ago. I miss you today as much as I started to 6 years ago. I feel as incomplete today as I began to 6 years ago.
It's a Boy Thing, a fortnightly chat about teaching English to boys with Gina and Chris.